Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, August 3rd, 2026. At least 700 structures lost in wildfires in Spokane and near Spokane. 67,000 people were evacuated over the weekend. 14 people have not gotten back to Spokane County Sheriff's after calling for help in evacuating. Ruling may require hundreds of ICE detainees released from Tacoma ICE Concentration Prison in Tacoma. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Spokane County Sheriff John Knowles says as of Monday morning, investigators were still trying to contact 14 people by phone who had asked for help evacuating themselves or loved ones, but who they have not heard from since the three major fires raced through parts of Spokane County and the city of Spokane Saturday. Knowles said his department received 290 reports of people needing help evacuating themselves or loved ones, and they had heard from all but 14 of them by Monday morning. He told the Spokesman Review website, "I do not want people to think that we have 14 missing people. These are people who may have called for help evacuating, and many of them likely did get evacuated. With poor cell phone coverage, cell phone batteries die, or they get to some place where they do find shelter, and we haven't been able to reach them by phone. They are people we are just trying to confirm are fine." Officials said at a Monday morning news conference, 700 structures have been confirmed destroyed in the Old Trails, Fairview, and Autumn Lane fires. They said they have yet to fully evacuate another 400 properties within the fire zones. The three fires burned a total of 8,000 acres by Monday morning. All three fires burned structures, but the property destruction is the highest in the Old Trails fire, which raced into the Indian Trail neighborhood of Northwest Spokane Saturday afternoon. Incident Commander Tom Clamo said 67,000 people evacuated during Level 3 Go Now evacuation orders Saturday afternoon. Spokane Mayor Lisa Brown said those evacuation zones are dangerous with fires still burning, and it's unknown when people can return to their homes or charred remains within the fire zone, but it could be a week or more. Brown said, "We don't know. It's neighborhood by neighborhood and block by block. And so we really want you to just pay attention. They are regularly reevaluating the situation, the weather, the fire, and the potential for things to reignite." Incident Commander Clamo said tens of thousands of structures are at risk of burning within the footprints of the three fires. He said, "We've got some of our best firefighters on the ground, hot shots. They're in there as well. Every resource that we have available, we're moving to that section. I'll also remind you, we still have two large fire footprints with active fire interior to them. And the last thing we want to do is have a burnt home and the embers of that home ignite a neighbor. And so we're in the process of trying to cover all those bases at the same time." Washington Governor Bob Ferguson said FEMA has not yet granted his request for aid, but the agency has started mobilizing resources in case it is granted. Ferguson said the type of direct federal assistance would include search and rescue, debris removal, medical supplies, assistance, temporary sheltering, emergency power. Spokane Mayor Lisa Brown called Saturday's three raging wildfires inside and near the city of Spokane that destroyed hundreds of homes and businesses the worst natural disaster the region has faced. The Old Trails fire began north of Airway Heights and jumped the Spokane River into the city of Spokane. burning at least 650 structures, including many homes in the Indian Trail neighborhood in the northwestern part of the city of Spokane. The same afternoon, just outside Spokane's northeastern city limits, the Fairview Fire in Meade burned 914 acres and left numerous houses burned to the ground, interspersed with homes that were seemingly untouched by the fire. The emergency evacuation zone included a population of about 60,000 people, and fire was threatening 14,000 structures as of Saturday, mostly in the city of Spokane. A line of cars drove southward on Northwest Boulevard Saturday afternoon ahead of the flames, which were driven by winds between 35 and 45 miles per hour. Roads into the evacuation zone remained blocked Sunday afternoon, with many residents hiking 2 miles into the area to see if their homes were still standing. There are no reports of deaths so far, but considering how rapidly the fire raced through the city Saturday afternoon, officials are expecting crews will find bodies among the burned buildings. Hundreds of residents of the northern part of Spokane were sheltering at the Spokane Convention Center downtown as they waited for word whether their homes survived the fire. Other fires in eastern Washington include the Kaiser Canyon Fire on the Colville Reservation near Omak Lake, which has burned 136,000 acres as of Monday afternoon. Lightning caused the fire on July 16th, and 968 personnel are fighting the blaze, which is 38% contained. Fire officials have predicted a containment date of September 1st. The Modrite Fire, also on the Colville Reservation along the west shore of Lake Roosevelt, was 51,100 acres as of late Monday morning and 17% contained. Lightning started the fire 17 miles southwest of Inchillium on July 17th. The community of Inchillium was evacuated late last week. 637 firefighters are working the blaze. The National Interagency Fire Center reports as of Monday there were 33 large wildfires burning in Oregon, 16 in Washington, and 8 in Idaho. The Big Grass Fire has brought unhealthy air quality to the Treasure Valley in southern Idaho during the last few days. The fire, which started in Oregon south of Jordan Valley weeks ago, has burned into southern Owyhee County in Idaho, scorching 336,000 acres. It is 19% contained. The Tartar Fire north of Weezer, Idaho, has burned 97,000 acres and is 16% contained, and the Fox Fire nearby in Oregon has burned 78,000 acres and is 46% contained. In the Boise foothills, the Claremont Fire has been burning for weeks and is 98% contained. That fire burned 6,600 acres. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has made a decision that may force the federal government to release hundreds of detainees at the ICE Detention Center in Tacoma, run by the multi-billion dollar private prison corporation, the GEO Group, and hundreds of ICE detainees in the other states in the Ninth Circuit, which includes California, Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Arizona, Idaho, Hawaii, Montana, and Nevada. The ruling by a three-judge panel Thursday in a class-action suit may require bond hearings for many of the detainees who are being held in concentration camp-like conditions with little or no due process and irregularly timed meals, unpalatable food that is often rotten or contaminated, poor drinking water, uneven access to medical care, abuse by guards, and little or no time outdoors. One of the judges on the three-judge panel dissented. The ruling in the case from the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project stems from the definition of seeking admission to the U.S. A 1996 federal law says people are subject to detention if they are seeking admission to the U.S., and the Trump administration says the word seeking applies to people who entered the U.S. without authorization and inspection, whether immigration officials detained them an hour after they entered the U.S. or if they had been here for several decades. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals panel said the Trump administration is contradicting the ordinary understanding of the word seeking, and its position is a sharp break from the past and from every reliable indicator of congressional, executive, or judicial understanding since Congress passed the law. However, other circuit appeals courts in the Fifth and Eighth Circuits have taken a different view in similar cases. The Seattle Times quoted right-wing former immigration judge Neil Floyd, who is Trump's pick to become the U.S. Attorney for Western Washington and who is acting in that position now. Referring to the Ninth Circuit Court panel's decision Thursday, Floyd said, "This decision from a divided court, along with the division in the other circuits, demonstrates that the issue is unsettled. We look forward to the Supreme Court resolving the issue." You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Public employees represented by the Washington Federation of State Employees have announced plans for a statewide walkout on August 31st in response to what they call subpar pay and program cuts. Workers from state agencies, universities, and healthcare facilities have been bargaining for a new contract with the state since April. WFSE President Mike Yastrzemski says his members are well aware that Washington faces financial challenges, but adds state leaders are taking months to respond to union proposals and sometimes don't respond at all.
We did not go into this with expectations of rainbows and lollipops and it to be really simple. We knew it was going to be a challenging bargaining session. That said, this has been the most difficult bargaining session that I have been a part of.
In media interviews, Washington's Office of Financial Management has refused to address claims of being unresponsive. State leaders project a budget shortfall of nearly $500 million in the next year as costs for state-funded programs and services rise faster than tax revenue. Governor Bob Ferguson says his December budget proposal will rely on cuts rather than new taxes. Most WFSE members received a 2% general raise in July and a 3% raise last year, levels that workers contend aren't enough to keep up with inflation. Yastrzemski says as the cost of living continues to climb, many public employees are broke.
No one is sitting here asking for a salary that's going to let them buy vacation homes and sports cars, but they should be able to pay their rent, buy enough groceries to feed their family.
Yastrzemski says in 2024, after thousands of WFSE members walked out of their jobs calling for a fair contract, they were able to reach some tentative agreements just 2 days later. He says this time around, the union is inviting businesses and other community members to join. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Here's voting information for Whitman County. Mail-in and drop-off ballots for the Washington top two primary for Congress must be postmarked or placed in a ballot drop box by Tuesday, August 4th at 8 p.m. Replacement ballots are available by contacting the Whitman County Elections Office. If you want your ballot to count, do not mail it unless you go to the post office when it's open Monday or Tuesday and have your ballot envelope postmarked that day. The Trump Postal Service has implemented slowdowns in postmarking. You can drop off your ballot before Tuesday, August 4th at 8 p.m. at the following Whitman County locations. In Pullman, below the Rose Hour sign in the parking lot, 1205 North Grand Avenue. In Pullman at Southeast Paradise Street, just outside Hinrichs Trading Company. No drop-off box on the WSU campus this election. In Colfax, Whitman County Elections Office, 304 North Main Street, and the alley behind the Elections Office at 304 North Main Street. In Oaksdale, in front of the Oaksdale Library, 103 South 1st Street. In Garfield, Town of Garfield City Hall, 405 West California Street. In St. John, adjacent to the Northwest Grain Growers Office, 33 East Front Street. To check your ballot status, go to votewa.gov. Election day only from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m., ballot boxes, replacement ballots, and accessible voting equipment are available at the Whitman County Elections Office, 304 North Main Street in Colfax. Accessible voting equipment is available Monday and Tuesday at the Whitman County Elections Office, 304 North Main Street in Colfax.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including tie-dye everything with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Ungadunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Ungadunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
A new training is helping to prepare police, paramedics, and other first responders to better support older adults in rural Oregon during disasters like wildfire or extreme weather events. Research shows older adults are disproportionately impacted by disasters, especially outside city centers. Julia Brown is with Oregon nonprofit Age Plus, which helped organize the free trainings. She says most emergency response systems rely on individuals to do things like pack a go bag and plan an evacuation route, but not everyone is able to do so.
That really doesn't account for the number of older adults that are living independently, may not have easy access to transportation, may be living with chronic illness or disability.
Brown adds there are much more older adults who face these specific challenges in rural communities. So far, the training has been piloted in 5 counties in North Central and Eastern Oregon, and Brown says it has been well received. Laura Byerly is with Oregon's Geriatrics Workforce Enhancement Program, which helped create the training. She says it touches on how to work with people with cognitive, physical, and emotional hurdles.
How do you actually think through the moral gut punch that can happen when an older adult says, I'm not leaving and you can't make me? What are the opportunities we have there for a conversation? What is the legal requirement?
Byerly adds part of the training is a role play so participants can experience firsthand some of the challenges older adults might be facing. She says that part was more fun than she expected.
When you get to see your county fire chief with sensory impairment goggles, earplugs, and a front wheel walker and say, this sucks, and get to say yes. And why would that potentially change how your interaction with an older adult goes in the future?
Her team is working with tribal and other emergency preparedness leads in southern and coastal Oregon about bringing the training to their locations. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The Moscow City Council will vote today on creating a donation account for the Moscow Police Department after resident Joyce Presby left the department about $25,000 in her will. City staff has prepared a resolution authorizing the creation of a Moscow Police Department donation account as a restricted fund balance to be used in support of the police department as included within the City of Moscow annual budget. The council will also hear an East City Park stage update from City Parks Director David Schott. The City Council will also hear a Citizen Commission report on the Sustainable Environment Commission from Commission Chair Steve McGeehan and City Sustainability Programs Director Kelly Cooper. The Moscow City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall.
As election season heats up in Montana, a former wildlife commissioner says one issue deserves bipartisan attention, public lands. The possibility of selling off public lands has become a divisive political issue in recent years. Former Montana Fish and Wildlife Commissioner Dan Vermillion says it's an issue that unites people in the state, regardless of their political affiliation.
Public lands are sort of like a fundamental piece of Montana. It's a fundamental piece of the Montana culture, and it's a foundational piece of our economy. Whether you're a rancher or, like me, somebody who's in the tourism business.
Vermillion grew up in Montana and co-owned Sweetwater Travel Company, a fly fishing outfitter in Livingston with his brothers. He served as the state's Fish and Wildlife Commissioner from 2007 to 2019. He feels public lands are threatened in Montana and the U.S. by politicians' efforts to transfer public land management to the private sector. Conservationists point to the Trump administration's rescission of the public lands rule this spring, which means conservation is no longer on an equal level with other development uses on public lands. Vermillion says Montanans have a chance to protect public lands at the ballot box this November. He encourages voters in the state to look beyond rhetoric and consider how elected leaders and candidates have voted or spoken on these issues.
When I look at the landscape and how the parties are talking about public lands, there's no no question that for me, I'm going to pick the candidate that I think best represents my beliefs and will be the most effective advocate for sound, balanced management of our public lands.
Montanans will elect a new U.S. senator this year after Republican Senator Steve Daines withdrew from his reelection campaign in March, saying he wants to spend more time with his family. The state's first congressional district will also elect a new representative after Republican Representative Ryan Zinke said he wouldn't run again due to health problems. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
And that's the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. The Idaho Department of Environmental Quality has an air quality alert that has been extended until Wednesday at noon for Clearwater, Idaho, Latah, Lewis, and Nez Perce counties. Air quality indexes forecast to be unhealthy for sensitive groups. This is due to wildfire smoke going through the region. Members of sensitive groups may experience health effects. The general public's less likely to be affected. Forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. Patchy smoke after 10 p.m. Widespread haze, low 45. And tomorrow, patchy smoke before 9 a.m. Sunny, high 84. Widespread haze as well, mostly clear, low 47 Tuesday night. And Wednesday through Friday, clear skies expected, highs 89 Wednesday, 94 Thursday and Friday, lows 51 Wednesday night, 54 Thursday night. The current temperature is 73 degrees. And the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality real-time air monitoring shows the air quality at this hour in Moscow is unhealthy for sensitive groups. Also unhealthy for sensitive groups in Lewiston and Julietta, point south of there, including Lapway, Orofino, Cottonwood, Grangeville, and Kamiai, unhealthy. Troy is moderate. Up in Coeur d'Alene, it's unhealthy for sensitive groups. Real-time air monitoring from the Washington Department of Ecology shows the air quality at this hour in Pullman is unhealthy for sensitive groups. It's unhealthy in Clarkston and in Spokane, with one station in Spokane reporting very unhealthy, and that is Liberty Lake. Currently 73 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman Community Radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Flashpoints is up next at 7:30. Music with Bex. Spotlight is the name of the show. And Chia Pets on to play music. Bad Radio Show, 9 to 11 p.m. tonight. Nardwuar the Human Serviette on at 11. Stay tuned. KRFP Moscow Pullman.